Good morning. Good morning. We just read in the Parshas HaShavua on Shabbos in Parshas Vayechi that when Yaakov was introduced to his grandsons Ephraim and Menashe, it says V'yayisos b'nei Yosef v'yomim miyela. He said, "Who are these fellows exactly?" And on some level, he seemed to be inquiring, "What is their legitimacy in terms of their yichus?" And the Torah goes on to say, "B'yom Yosef alaviv banai heim." Yosef said, "These are my sons. Asher nasan li Elokim bazet, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given me bazet with this." What's the this? So Rashi says, "Herolo shtar erisin shtar ksuva," that Yosef showed to his father Yaakov the shtar erisin, demonstrating that this was a kosher marriage, that the woman he was married to was presumably Jewish, converted, that it was a legitimate marriage, and he showed Yaakov the shtar kesuva. So it seems from at least Rashi's perish that there is some foundation for the idea of a kesuva already going back to the Torah, that we find that this is a concept that existed already in the days of Yaakov and Yosef. So we know that a major centerpiece, a major cornerstone of every single Jewish wedding is, of course, the ksuba. And probably the most common type of shilos that I receive from Misadre Kiddushin when they want to figure out how to perform a wedding properly is with respect to the ksuba, to make sure that everything is spelled properly, that the names of the chassan and the kala are spelled properly, that they write the name of the location properly, that they identify the location properly. And we also deal with the tremendous urgency that arises when a couple discovers that after a move or something like that, they lost their kesuba, and they come to the Beis Din in order to write a kesuba de erkesa, a replacement kesuba, or somebody discovers a serious error in a kesuba. A lot of people hang up, they display the kesuba on the wall, so every now and then they'll have a smart aleck talmid chacham who will come as a guest for dinner, and they'll look at the kesuba and say, "Hey, the name was written wrong, the date was written wrong." They'll discover the location was written wrong, they'll discover some major mistake in the kesuba, and then people will come to us at the Beis Din to write a kesuba d'ishtachak ba'tehusa, to write a replacement kesuba where the original kesuba had a mistake. Or sometimes, I had this not so long ago, there'll be a couple that's looking at their ksuba, and they'll discover that it's fading and fading, or at least the signatures of the Edom are fading to the point where you might not even be able to recognize the signatures of the Edom after a little bit more time passes. So then you write a ksuba, shenishtashta shalba ksav, a ksuba, you have a special form in order to preserve the effectiveness of the ksuba, where everything is recorded in a separate document before the signatures of the Edom will fade entirely. So people are very, very medactic to make sure that the ksuba is just so, that the ksuba is just right, that the ksuba maintains its validity. And indeed, we can understand this in light of the fact that we paskin in Shulchan Aruch and Eben Ezer and Simon Samech Vav, Siv Gimel, we paskin like Rabbi Meir, that us in Baba Kama pay test, that us lo adam lisho says ishto apilu sha'achas below kesuba, that it is forbidden for a man to live together with his wife even for 1 minute without having a kosher kesuba. So having a kosher kesuba, we understand, is a very big deal. However, the question that I want to pose today is, what is, at least in modern times, what is the actual import and function of the kesuba? The ksuba, as we know, is primarily a document that provides what the husband is going to pay to his wife, or his estate will pay to his wife, in the event of death or a divorce. That the husband will, if the husband dies, then he pays a certain sum of money. We know it's Masayim Zuz for a woman who's getting married the first time. Standard amount of a ksuba is 200 Zuz. And for an almana, for a widow, or for a grusha, for a divorced woman, it is 100 zuz. It's only 100 zuz in such a case. And this is an amount that the husband obligates himself to pay in the amount of death or divorce. And we also have a tosefes kesuba. We have an additional amount which is added on in the Ashkenazic tradition. That additional amount is 200 zekukim for a besula and 100 zekukim for an amana, grusha, or a non-besula. So nowadays, You don't necessarily hear about people claiming this in the event of death or divorce so much. So let's figure out exactly what it is that makes the ksuba so indispensable and essential nowadays. So the Gemara says in a few places that the purpose of the ksuba is shalote kala be'inav lehotzia. That the purpose of the husband undertaking that he's going to pay this amount of money is primarily to avoid a precipitous or impulsive divorce. That a husband, it used to be, in biblical times, before Rabbeinu Gershom came along, it used to be that a husband was able to divorce his wife against the will. He could divorce his wife al korcho. So we're worried that a husband's going to get into a fight with his wife, he's going to get into a spat, he's going to see another woman on the street, and he's going to become infatuated. And even though his marriage is a perfectly fine and functional marriage, he's going to impulsively and impetuously divorce his wife. So since we don't want him to do that, so therefore he obligates himself to pay a certain sum of money in the event that he would divorce his wife, and hopefully that will discourage the husband from precipitously divorcing his wife, even when there is a functional marriage. There's even a dispute that you'll find in the Shulchan Aruch Emunah Ezer Siman Kuf Yutes, a dispute between the Rosh and the Rashba. Shulchan Aruch brings the approach of the Rosh, no se kelim quote the Rashba, about what if a husband wants to divorce his wife, let's say before Cheren the Rabbeinu Gershom, when he could divorce his wife against her will. And he didn't have the money for the kesuba. He wasn't able to afford it. Was he allowed to divorce his wife and just take upon himself as like a shtar chov, as a future indebtedness, that he would pay the amount of the kesuba? It was a chov that he had, but could he say that he would obligate himself to pay the debt at a later date? Or do we say no? If he didn't have that money at the point in time of the divorce, then he wasn't even allowed to divorce his wife. So according to the Rosh, quoted in the Shulchan Aruch, he would be allowed to divorce his wife as long as he took upon himself the debt that he would pay at a later point in time. But the Noseh Kelim, quote the Rashba, this is all in the materials, who says if he doesn't have the money to pay right away, we wouldn't allow him to divorce, even if he would say that he'll take it upon himself as an indebtedness. So this was a real discouragement and a disincentive for a husband to divorce his wife if he knew he had to pay the money. And according to the Rashba, if he didn't have the money available, that would absolutely be a prohibitive factor against his being able to divorce his wife. Now, is this a deraisa requirement, or is this a derabbanan requirement? So it sounds from the Gemara, when the Gemara speaks about shalote kala be'ina of the hosia, as we have in the source materials, from the Gemara. The Gemara quotes this in Yevamos Daf Pei Tes Amud Aleph, source 10. My time at Takino Lo Rabbanan Kesuba Kadesh Lo Te Kala Be'inav Lehotzia. It sounds like it's a Takanos Chachamim. The truth of the matter is, it depends who you ask. This is a Machlokis Tanoim. It's a Machlokis Amoraim. It's a Machlokis Rishonim. It's a Machlokis Achronim, as to whether Ksuva is the Raisa or whether Ksuva is the Rabbanan. The Machlokis Tanoim is between Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel and the Chachamim. The Mari Ksuva Stap Yud speaks about this. There's a Mishnah towards the end of Kesuvos that says if a man married a woman in Kaputkiya, the coins that they had to pay whatever debt needed to be paid, save the Ksuva debt, the coins were bigger and they were heavier. So it was more valuable, the coins of Kaputkiya. So if a man married a woman in Kaputkiya and then he divorced her in Eretz Yisrael, does he have to pay her according to the coins of Kaputkiya, which are more valuable, or according to the coins of Eretz Yisrael, which are less valuable? So Chachamim say, according to the coins of Eretz Yisrael, which are less valuable, because Ksuva is only the Rabbanan, and therefore we're going to be lenient. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, no, he has to pay according to the coins of Kaputkiya that he originally obligated himself in, because he got married in Kaputkiya. Why is that? Because according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Ksuva is a deraisa. Now this idea of where the ksuba is deraisa derabbanan, you find that Rashi al HaTorah, a number of places, seems to indicate, as we just quoted at the beginning of the shiur from the Maisa of Yaakov and Yosef, where he says that Asher Nasan Li Elokim Bazet, the Rashi in a number of places indicates the ksuba is deraisa. You look in source Gimel with respect to the whole parsha Mefateh, a man seduces a woman, and she's a young woman, and he has relations with her. So we say that he is supposed to marry her, but if the father doesn't want to give her in marriage, then kesef yishkol kemor habisulos, then he has to pay money kemor habisulos, like the dowry that's given to a bisula, to a virgin unmarried woman. So Rashi says, Mahor yim haren lo li isha, yipsak lo mohar ki mishpat ish li ishto shekosev lo ksuba bi yisaena. That he has to pay her this amount of money. What is the amount of money? What's the mohar? So Rashi says, this is the idea that he's supposed to write a kesuva and marry her. So Rashi seems to indicate that kesuva is a deraisa notion. And Rashi goes on to say, Kemora Bisulos, what is that amount? Shukosuv nun kesef. It's a itzla topis, it's a bisula v'shochi b'ma b'ones. The Torah has in Parashas Kitetz, say if a man rapes a young woman, that he's obligated to pay a penalty amount of chamishim kesef, of 50 shkalim. So that's the amount of the kesuva. Rashi indicates that would be sort of the kesuva amount that we're talking about when we speak about moar abisulos. So that is the amount. So the Ramban, if you take a look in source A, the Ramban says that this is not correct. First of all, it's not the way to read the psukim, says the Ramban, because if you look at the psukim with respect to the case of mefate, it says only if the father doesn't want to give over his daughter in marriage, is there an obligation of paying kesef yishkol kemoar habisulos? So this is almost like a kenas that ends up being paid 50 shkolim. However, says the Ramban, if in fact there is a marriage that takes place where we say mori mareno loli isha, so this does not mean that there is a payment of the kesuva. There's no payment of the kesuva, at least not according to Torah law, says the Ramban, in the event that he would marry the woman. So what is the moar? Ramban says that's something totally different. Moar means, like we have a concept that's discussed in the Shulchan Aruch of siblonos, when a man is betrothed to a woman, and he's about to marry her, so he sends her various gifts. He sends her clay kesef, clay zaru, begadim, clothes, and nice pieces of jewelry, and nice golden and silver utensils. That's called siblonos. That's what the Torah is talking about. It's not talking about kesuva at all. There is no notion of a kesuva in the context of marriage on a level of the araisa, according to the Ramban. So this is a question. How do we paskin? So as I mentioned, it's a machlokis, so the Rambam seems contradictory. The Rambam in Hilchos Ishus, Perek Yud, Halacha Zayin, says, Chachamim hem shetiknu ksuva lisha kadei shlo teikal veina lotzia. The Rambam seems to be pretty explicit that kesuva is only a din derabanan, it's only a rabbinic idea, and yet at the same time in the Sefer HaMitzvos, where the Rambam is talking about what the mitzvos are on a d'oraisa level, the Rambam says that the mitzvah, lo sase, negative commandment number 355, is he she's a harnish lo lava lisha below ksuva lo kiddushin, is that we are adjured not to have relations with a woman unless there is kiddushin, unless there is marriage, and unless there is a kesuva. So the Rambam seems to indicate very clearly in the Sefer HaMitzvos that the kesuva is on a level of deraisa. Similarly, in his heading to all of Hilchos Ishus, the Rambam says that one of the positive commandments that he's going to talk about in Hilchos Ishus is Lisa Isha B'Ksuva V'Kiddushin, is that you're supposed to marry a woman with kesuva and kiddushin. So it's difficult. What would the Rambam be if there wouldn't be some sort of a stira in the Rambam? It wouldn't be the Rambam. So there's a stira, some sort of a contradiction in the Rambam, even to understand what the Rambam's position is. And I'm sorry? So that's one of the explanations. So you'll find in the Rishonim, there are basically three different Mahalchim that you'll find in the Rishonim. You take a look in the Ritva, in source Zion, so the Ritva sums up many of the different shitos here from the Ramban, from himself, and this is all codified in the Shulchan Aruch and Siman Samach Vav, Sif Vav, all of the different approaches. Now, part of what needs to be incorporated into the discussion as well is what is the nature of the silver in which the ksuva is going to be paid. We said that the ksuva amount is for a besula, the standard amount is 200 zuz. We said 200 zuz is 50 shkalim because there are 4 zuz in every single shekel. Ergo, 200 zuz equals 50 shekelim, right? A zuz is also a dinar, 4 dinarim and a shekel. So there are 200 zuz, 200 dinarim, all together as 50 shekelim. Those shekelim, are those paid in terms of pure silver, what we would call kesef tsuri, when the Torah talks about shekelim, like the shekelim that you pay for pidyon haben, or the shekelim that's paid in the case of an onus, a man who rapes a woman, or in the case of mefate, if the man doesn't end up marrying the woman because the husband, the father of the girl, doesn't want to give the girl to the mefate. So when we talk about shekelim on a Torah level, we're talking about pure silver. We're talking about the most pristine type of shekelim. That's what we call kesef zuzi, kesef tsuri. However, there's also another type of kesef, which is called kesef medina, which is called like ordinary type of kesef, which is only worth 1/8 the amount of kesef tsuri. It has 7 parts copper and 1 part silver. So when we say that the 200 zuz have to be paid, is it in terms of kesef tsuri, in terms of the pure silver type of kesef, or is it in terms of kesef medina? So this also may tie in to whether you hold the ksuvis deraisa, whether you hold ksuvis derabbanan. It might stand to reason if you say ksuvis deraisa, so then the kesef should be on a deraisa level as well. It should be kesef tsuri. And if you say the ksuvis derabbanan, so maybe you would pay in terms of kesef medina. But even this is subject to some discussion. So one opinion is that ksuva we paskin like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, that as a general rule we say kol malkam sheshanam Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel mishnasenu alacha kemoso, that almost always when we have Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel in a mishnah we paskin like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, and that's the approach of Rabbeinu Tam. So Rabbeinu Tam says ksuva is the araisa, and the Ri takes this one step further and says, well, since ksuva is the araisa, so therefore the payment of the 200 zuz has to be in terms of kesef tsuri. It has to be in terms of the purest possible silver. And this is why in our ksuva, what do we typically write? When we're dealing with a besula, we write in the ksuva, dechazi lichi mi the araisa. We say that this is money that is that you're entitled to on a Torah level. Other opinion, the opinion of the Rosh. The Rosh is of the opinion, no, we don't all pass like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel when we find that there are Amorayim. In the Gemara in Ksuvas Daf Ayin Zayin, there are Amorayim that disagree about Ksuvas Deraisa or not. So it's not automatically that we're going to pass like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, and he thinks that the Sugya, Maskana of the Sugya is that Ksuvah is the Rabbanan. However, says the Rosh, you could still sit right, Kesef Tsuri, the Chazi Lichim Midaraisa in the Ksuvah, because the husband essentially obligates himself on a derabbanan level that he's going to pay kesef, he's got the silver that he's going to pay the ksuva in will be kesef tsuri, that it's going to be the most impeccable, purest type of silver. And then you have the third approach, which is the approach of the Ritva, which says that ksuva is the derabbanan, and therefore the kesef should be kesef medina. That no, we're going to make an equation. Just like if you follow Rabbeinu Tam all the way, you say if Suvah is deraisa, it has to be paid in kesef tsuri. So too, if you're pasking Suvah is derabbanan, so then it should be paid in accordance with kesef medina. It should be paid in accordance with the lower form of kesef. That's how the Mechaber paskins, and that would be the psak according to the Sfaradim. This is very important, because in the event that the ksuva actually would have to get paid out in the event of death or divorce, so we need to know, how are we going to evaluate the silver? Are we going to evaluate according to kesef tsuri? Are we going to evaluate according to kesef medina? So the Ramah seems to take the approach that our practice is that we pay the ksuva in accordance with kesef tsuri, that we pay it in accordance with the most valuable type of silver, the pure silver. It's kesef tsuri in the event that the woman who's married is a besula. If she's never been married, she's a virgin, then she gets kesef masayim, she gets the 200 zuz, and it is paid in accordance with kesef tsuri. But if the woman is not a besula, then and she only gets 100 zuz, that 100 zuz is paid in accordance with kesef medina. Since it's paid in accordance with kesef medina, so it turns out that a woman who's not a besula actually ends up getting paid, if we would calculate how much money she is entitled to in the event of death or divorce, it would be 1/16 the amount that a besula would receive, because she only receives 100 zuz as opposed to 200 zuz, and it's evaluating a type of kesef which is only worth 1/8 the amount of kesef tsuri. So it's 1/8 times 1/2. Therefore, it ends up being 1/16 that a non-besula would receive. So there is a fourth shita, which is the shita of the Ramban. The Ramban says that even within Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, you could say, well, the ksuva is deraisa, the idea that something has to be paid in on a deraisa level. However, if you look at the actual cases where the Torah speaks about when you have to have a 50 shkalim, so it's limited to the case of an onus, where the amount is paid before the woman gets married altogether. In fact, a man is not allowed to divorce a woman whom he rapes. Lo yukal shalcha koyamab, the Torah says. He's not allowed to divorce her. So therefore, since he's not allowed to divorce her, we don't have to worry about shlotei kala bein avlotzia. We don't have to worry that he's ever going to divorce her against her will because he's not allowed to. Therefore, if they both agree to get divorced, guess how large her ksuva is? Zero. She gets no ksuva because we don't need a disincentive in that particular case. So we don't really find in the traditional case of divorce that the Torah talks about that a ksuva ever really, that the 50 shkalim ever get paid. So therefore, the Ramban says that, yeah, according to Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, there is this idea of ksuva on a Torah level, but there's no mandate, according to the Torah, that in a regular case of divorce, 50 shkalim have to get paid out. Even in the case of mefata, the 50 shkalim is only paid in the event you don't have a marriage. So there, according to the strict reading of the simple reading of the psukim, as the Ramban pointed out in his disagreement with Rashi, so therefore the Ramban says that the calculation of how much money gets paid for the ksuva, that, even according to Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, would only be derabbanan. And whether to make a kesef tsuri or kesef medina is also a derabbanan determination, and therefore you could perfectly say, according to this derabbanan component of the ksuva, that the idea of ksuva, that you have to pay something, is a deraisa idea, but maybe it doesn't have to get paid altogether in kesef tsuri. It could even be paid in kesef medina, even in the event that you hold the ksuva is deraisa. So therefore, all of the different permutations run the gamut, from ksuva being deraisa and the kesef tsuri therefore having to be deraisa, to ksuva being derabbanan and therefore the kesef is paid in terms of kesef medina, to the notion of the rosh that ksuva is derabbanan but the payment is made in kesef tsuri for a besula, or the opinion of the Ramban that ksuva is deraisa but the kesef can still be paid in terms of kesef medina. So even in terms of the way that we paskin, Ashkenazim paskin, like the Ramah, different ways of understanding it, as you see in the Chilkos Mechokek says, well, Ramah says that for a besula we pay in terms of kesef tsuri, 200 zuz. You can understand that like Rabbeinu Tam, based on ksuva being deraisa, or he says that really the way we paskin is like the rush, the ksuva, the rova poskin, the majority of poskin hold like the rush, the ksuva is the rabbanon, and nonetheless, our minog, because this is like a tanai shimimamon, that the husbands have taken this upon themselves, the rabbis instituted that the husbands are obligated to pay according to kesef tsuri. But even at the end of the day, if you're calculating according to kesef tsuri, and we have a divorce case that comes in front of the Beis Din, and we have to calculate the ksuva, so let's say it's a besula and it's 200 zuz, so what does it come out to? How much money are we talking about? Does anybody even know what the amount would be? So how much is 200 zuz? So as we said, there are 4 zuz in a shekel, there are 50 shkalim in a ksuva. What would that be? That's 10 times the amount of pidyon abein. I care about the amount of pidyon abein. I'm a kohen. Sometimes I get paid with pinyon abein. I have 5 shkolim that I walk around with. Somebody wants to do a pinyon abein, I sell the shkolim to the person, but I sell it according to market value. That's what I get for a pinyon abein. So I got to know, what is the market value of 5 shkolim nowadays? Well, let's figure it out. We have 200 zuz. Every single zuz is 192 prutos. A zuz is 192 prutos. A pruta is a very important coin because when you marry a woman, you have to give her a ring, which is shave pruta. It has to be worth a pruta. So we got to know how much a pruta is worth too, as well. How much is a pruta worth? It's worth the value of silver that weighs a half of a barley grain. That's what Chazal say. It's worth the value of silver that weighs the half of a barley grain. How much does a barley grain weigh? A barley grain weighs 0.05 grams. So 5 shkalim is 700, and every single shekel is 768 prutos, because it's 192 prutos times 4 is 1 shekel. So 5 shkalim is going to be 768 times 5, which is 3,840 prutos. That corresponds to 1,920 barley grains. 1,920 barley grains, each one is 0.05 grams, so multiply that by 0.05 and you get 96 grams of silver. Okay, if you don't remember, you listen to the tape. So that comes out to 5 shkalim. Okay, so 5 shkalim is 96 grams of silver. So that's how much Pinyan HaBein is worth. So 50 shkalim, which would be the amount of a ksuba, because a ksuba is 50 shkalim, so it's worth 10 times the amount of Pinyan HaBein, so it would be 960 grams of silver. Now it happens that for Pinyan HaBein, we round up. We round up to 100 grams of silver. So 101, we round up, generally speaking, we say it should be worth 100 grams of silver. So I suppose for purposes of our discussion, it's not such a huge margin of error. We could round up the ksuva as well to 1,000 grams of silver, but technically it's 960 grams of silver. So as of Friday, December 21st, 2018, the silver price per ounce was $14.80. It's been fluctuating. A few weeks ago, it was $14.24, so $14.11. It's been going up a little bit, you know. Per gram, it's 48 cents per gram, in which case 96 grams of silver comes out to $46.08. 100 grams would be $48. If I did a Pinyan HaBein today, so I would charge $48 a Pinyan HaBein. A few years ago, it was like $100. It's gone down. You know, silver goes up, goes down. All right. So 200 zuz, this is the entire strict calculation according to Kesef Tzuri. This is pure silver. We're talking about pure silver over here. Would come out today, or as of Friday, to $480. Or more precisely, if you count the 96 grams, to $460.80. Not a tremendous amount of money. And if you would calculate a ksuba for a woman who is getting married a second time, an almana or a grusha, and she only gets 100 zuz, that's kesef medina, which is only 1/16 of that. So the entirety of a ksuba that an almana or a grusha would get nowadays, if you just calculated the silver value of 100 zuz in kesef medina, would be $30. You get $30 nowadays. That would be the entire value of the ksuba. Would not be a tremendous disincentive for most people to go about divorcing their wife. So if you wanted to go from this derivation to figure out how much a pruta was nowadays, so you would say that, well, if the value of Pinyan HaBein is, let's go with the $48, about 4,800 cents, and we know that the 5 shkolim represents 3,840 pruta, so it comes out that the value of a pruta nowadays is about 1.2 cents. That's how much a pruta is, if you want to know. Still a little bit more than a penny, 1.2 cents. So the Sma, I have this in the materials, asks the question, if a pruta would not have much of a buying value, this is source Yudalit, half of source Yudalit got cut off. I have no idea why it got cut off. In my printout, it's not cut off. But in yours, it's cut off. However, at least you see exactly where it is. It's in Simon Peches, a Sifkatun base. So the Sma points out that a pruta, at least even in his days, didn't end up having much of buying power. And he said that if it doesn't have much buying power, so then you would have to go to whatever is the smallest coin that actually does have buying power. So the question is, does a penny get you anywhere nowadays? When I was growing up as a little kid, we had something known as penny candy. They still have the candy, but I think it costs more than a penny now. And you would pay the penny and get this delicious penny candy. But nowadays, I'm not sure you could actually buy anything for a penny. But we still say a penny saved is a penny earned. So I suppose that a penny still has some significance. So for the time being, I don't think that we have officially bumped up a pruta from a penny to a nickel. But according to the Sma, that is something to consider. But right now, it's 1.2 cents. So again, the value of a ksuba comes out to approximately $480 nowadays, and for a basula, and $30 for an almanu or a grusha. Yes?
What would be the basis of saying that it's not the rice if you have the measures that they're up quoted at the beginning, and then also the pasuk gemara basulas?
So another way, so we didn't explain, how do we account for the Rambam? So there were two different approaches within the Rambam. Some understand the Rambam the way the Ramban understood Rambam Shimon ben Gamliel. That according to the Rambam, the idea that you have to pay something, that's the idea of ksuba, that's a deraisa idea, but how much you end up paying, how many shkolim it is, or whether it's mostly kesef tzuri, kesef medina, so that all is on a derabbanan level. You find that in the Hagos Maimonius as well, you can certainly understand that way. The way Rav Soloveitchik understood the Rambam was that the Rambam said that there's the idea of chiyuv ksuba. You look in the Shulchan Aruch, there's hilchos ksuba. Hilchos ksuba isn't only about the 200 zuz that gets paid at the end of the marriage. It's also about the obligations that a husband has to take care of his wife, of sherek sus ve'ona. So says Rav Soloveitchik, when the Rambam said that there's a daraisa obligation of providing a ksuva to one's wife, he meant sherek sus ve'ona. He meant that the obligations, the day-to-day living obligations that a husband has towards his wife, to provide her with food, clothing, shelter, companionship, all of these types of things, that with food, clothing, companionship are on a daraisa level, according to the Rambam. That's what the Rambam meant when he spoke about the ksuva. In other words, there's hilchos ksuva, there's kind of like the idea of the obligations of the ksuva, and then there's the ksuva. So as far as the ksuva is concerned, this document called the ksuva that provides for the 200 zuz upon death or divorce, so that the Rambam held was on a derabbanan level, that was tiknu chachamim. But the idea that there is some sort of an obligation of hilchos ksuva, so that is what the Rambam felt is on a derisa level, and you can understand all of these midrashim along those lines. Anyway, Rav Moshe Feinstein, in his Tshuvos, notes that this is really the fact that a ksuva, sometimes if I just value the 200 zuz, it doesn't always come out to all that much. That's one of the reasons why Chazal introduced the idea of Tosefes ksuva, of the husband assuming an additional obligation above and beyond the 200 zuz, so that this would create more of a disincentive for the husband divorcing his wife precipitously. So the amount that the Ashkenazi community took upon itself, and the Sephardic community might vary from case to case, in the Ashkenazi community is a standard form ksuva of 200 zekukim. 200 zekukim. So 200 zekukim would be for a besula, and even an almana or a grusha would receive 100 zekukim. Whatever a zakuk is, it wouldn't be that they're getting 1/16 of 200 zekukim. They would be getting only one half, because a zakuk is a zakuk, whether you're dealing with a besula, whether you're dealing with an almana or a grusha, so everybody is going to be substantially better off. So somebody asked for Moshe Feinstein, great, how much is this? And Moshe Feinstein said, nobody knows. So Moshe, this is in Ebn Ezer, Chelek Dalet, Simen Sadi Aleph. He said that, you know, people came from Europe. They had some concept of what it was in Europe, but he said that here, once we've come to America and everything has been switched around to dollars, nobody really understands anything. Hashem, 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 Abbe, Hadala, Lo Yadua, even the great poskim and the dayanim really have no idea what the shirak suva is, says Moshe. And they didn't really have a chance to research this. You say, what? People don't get divorced, them don't die. So how is it that nobody knows how much it is? So he says, because it almost never comes up. How can it never come up? He says, since nowadays we have Rabbeinu Gershom. Rabbeinu Gershom said that a man can no longer divorce his wife against her will. So therefore, if he wants to divorce her with his wife, there'll be a negotiation. They'll negotiate some sort of amount. Since they're going to negotiate some sort of amount, it's not at the end of the day going to be dependent upon the ksuba, much like the halakha that's codified in Shulchan Aruch with respect to the onus, the man who can't divorce his wife against his will because he raped her and was obligated to marry her if she should want to marry him for whatever reason. So he's not allowed, according to Torah law, to ever divorce her. And in the event that they agree to get divorced, so it says Meforish in Simen Kuf Ayin Zayin Sif Gimel in Ebn Ezer, that there's no ksuva in such a case. It's Vikach, since Eino Rashai Leotzia Leolam El Ritzona, Lefikach Ein Sarek Liktov Lo Ksuva. So it says to Moshe Feinstein that it's virtually never ever going to come up. Was this idea of Moshe Feinstein that it's never, almost never going to come up, was this a chiddush of Moshe Feinstein? So the amazing thing is, no, it was not a chiddush of Moshe Feinstein. You know whose chiddush this was? This was a chiddush of none other than the Rama. If you look in source number 10 above, the Rama had a very radical idea. Very radical idea. Somehow they printed the Rama anyway, even though he came up with this radical idea. He escaped controversy over this one. But the Rama makes a very radical suggestion. Wait one moment. You had a question. No, okay. So Rama had a very radical suggestion. The Rama says, you know what? Kol zeh midina. This whole thing about ksuva, I know we just started hilchos ksuvos, and like, you know, you're all very excited about it and all that. So one second. Wait, not Sif Tesvav. The Rama is somewhere else. I have to find where the Rama is. No, the Rama was earlier in the Maran Mekomos. One second. The Rama is in Ches. Okay, fine. Okay, in source Ches. So the Rama in source Ches says like this. No. Okay, I'm going to find this Rama for you. I don't know. I can't find the Rama right now. Somebody help me out. Where is the Rama that we're looking for? Okay, we are looking at source 17. Yitzai. So Rama in source 17 says like this. Imkain, he says, Vayen the command Simon Kupai and Zayin, the Makam Shem Magashi Makmiratsan Aisha, that where you can only divorce a woman based on her voluntary agreement, ain't Sarathik Toksuba. You don't need to write a Ksuba. That's the case of Onis, of the rape victim that we just discussed. Imkain is Manazem Medinos Elu. So nowadays, Shem Magashi Makoka Shlisham Shemchain Rabbeinu Gershom. Nowadays that we have the Chain Rabbeinu Gershom, Kamoshi Spada command Simon Kupi Yates, Haya Efshal Hakev Ksiva Saksuba. So therefore, we could have been lenient not to require a ksuba altogether. Unbelievable Rama. The Rama says the same thing. Since it's not really going to come up, since we don't need this disincentive anymore, since a husband cannot divorce his wife against the will, really we could have done away with the ksuba. And the Rama says, oh, but you know, that's not the minig. Oh, yeah, it's the minig of ksuba. It's a cute minig. We have this minig of ksuba, but really we could have dispensed with the ksuba altogether. How could such a thing be? So the Chelkas Mechokek jumps on the Rama, and the Chelkas Mechokek says, no. That's a very different story that we have with respect to the rape victim, because there is on a Torah level a prohibition to divorce the woman against her will, but here it's only on a Derabbanan level that we have Chayim and Rabbeinu Gershom, and we're not going to do away with the Ksuva based on a rabbinic prohibition to divorce a woman against her will. So therefore, there's a big distinction between the cases. The Vilna Gaon says the same thing, and the Otzer HaPoskim quotes the Avnei Mishpat is pointing out that in the rape victim case, she really did receive a 50 ksuba shekel payment. She just received the 50 shekel payment prior to the marriage taking place, but it's not even in that case there is a payment of 50 shkalim. So he says that that's not even a good raya, it's not even a good proof if we're just going to refer to that case, because in that case, so she doesn't get paid at the end because she got paid at the beginning, but that's not a proof that a woman who didn't get paid at the beginning shouldn't get paid at the end. So the truth of the matter is that based on this observation of Rav Moshe, based on this comment that the Rama made as well, it really doesn't come up so much. But if it did come up, so how would you evaluate the 200 zikukim? So there are three major shitas. There's the shita of the Chazon Ish. We have the Chazon Ish here in source 20. Again, somehow got cut off a little bit. The Chazon Ish says that the value of the ksuva is basically that 60 zuzim equals that's or 15 shkalim equals one zakuk. So if you take the zuzim and you multiply the 200 zuz by 60, so that is what the value of 200 zakukim would be. So if you take the value of 96 grams of silver, you multiply it by, of 960 grams of silver, you multiply it by 60, so that is going to be 57.6 kilograms. 57.6 kilograms, whatever the value of silver for that is going to be, that's going to be the value of the ksuba as of Friday. According to the Chazon Ish, 200 zakukim would be $27,407.81. According to Rav Chaim Nar in Shiurei Torah, Rav Chaim Nar was very well known. This is source 23 for having the lowest possible measurements for everything. So he says that basically a zakuk is only about four times a zuz. So you would take the 960 grams, multiply that value by approximately four, be 3,846 grams exactly. According to him, it would come out according to the latest values to $1,846.08. Also not a lot, and if we were dealing with an Amana or a Grusha, it would only be about $920. According to Moshe Feinstein says, very simple calculation, that the 200 zakukim come out to 100 pounds of silver, because the zakuk is equivalent to 2 zehuvim, or 16 lut, and every single one of these is going to equal a half of a pound. So every single zakuk is a half of a pound. 200 zakukim is 100 pounds, not toy pounds, regular pounds, from what I understand. So therefore, according to Rav Moshe Feinstein, comes out to about 45.5 kilograms worth of silver as of Friday. According to Rav Moshe Feinstein, drum roll please, the value of a ksuba, the 200 zakukim of silver, would be $21,583.33. full value of that would go to an Amana Grushas, they would end up with at least a little bit more than $10,000. So Moshe does not add the 200 zuz into the mix. You can understand. 200 zuz is just adding $480 or so into the mix. This is consistent with the Beis Shmuel. Also, in the material source Yud Tes, where the Beis Shmuel is of the opinion in source source 13, the Beis Shmuel is of the opinion that he quotes at least the Minag Poland. The Minag Poland, which is also cited by the Drisha, was that once the 200 Sukkim was paid, since the 200 Sukkim was a very substantial amount, they didn't have to add back into the mix the 200 Zuz, because the 200 Zuz was just trivial at that point in time, so it's all subsumed within the 200 Sukkim. Of course, if you pass like Rav Chaim Noah, it does make sense to add the 200 Zuz back as well, because you only start off with about $1,800 or $100, you may as well add back the $480 as well. But Moshe said they didn't always end up paying the 200 Sukkim. Whenever the 200 Zuz was enough, based on their cost of living, to be a substantial amount, they measured it according to 75 rubles in Poland and so forth, so then you didn't need the 200 Sukkim. But when you would have a point in time like we do nowadays, that the 200 Zuz wouldn't amount to very much, so then you would trigger the 200 Sukkim of silver and you would evaluate on that basis. But who should the Bezdin Paskin like? If we have cases nowadays, where is it going to come up? And Moshe says it's only going to come up in a case where a woman says to her husband, okay, I'll let you divorce me, but provided that you pay me the ksuva. Or it could come up with an amana, that a man dies and the amana wants to collect the ksuva. And Moshe says usually the amount that's left in the estate by the husband will be more than sufficient to cover whatever the ksuva amount would have been, and therefore he says that's going to be sufficient. It'll be good enough, even if Dina de Mahusa requires the husband to leave a certain amount for the amana, and that would cover the amount of the ksuva. He says that would be good enough. But he says, so it could come up, certainly, if you have a Bezdin case, the parties are in front of Bezdin, let's say the Bezdin, the parties don't negotiate between themselves. The Bezdin is mechayev the husband to give his wife a get, and then the Bezdin has to decide what is the value of the ksuva. So it could come up nowadays. I've sat on a number of cases, not that many, where the part, for whatever reason, it was deemed appropriate where the woman claimed the ksuva. There wasn't otherwise a negotiated settlement between the parties. We have to figure out what the ksuva is worth. So one point in time at the Bezdin of America, we sent a shaila. Rabbi Wild sent a shaila to a number of the poskim in Eretz Yisrael, including Rav Chaim Zimbalist, including Rav Zalman Nechemya Goldberg, to weigh in on this question. So one answer we received was, no, Yad Baal Ashtar HaTachtona. Somebody wants to collect based on a contract, based on a document, they only get the minimalist reading of the document in terms of how much they can extract from the other parties. Therefore, Paskin like Rav Chaim Noah, not going to end up being a lot of money. Nowadays, $1,800 plus $480, approximately $2,300, even for a Basula, wouldn't come up to that much. But Zalman Nechemya Goldberg said, wait a second, here in America, maybe America is considered Ramosha Feinstein's territory, and Minag America maybe should be Minag Ramosha Feinstein. So a number of Bati Din say, oh, let's follow, this is America, Ramosha Paskin for us in America, he Paskin 100 pounds of silver, so therefore they will evaluate based on the 100 pounds of silver. Now, there is, however, another possible approach, which you find in the writings of Yitzchak Libis, the Beis Avi. We have that in Source Kuf Aleph over here, and in the writings of Shlomo Duchovsky, which is on the Bezdin HaGadol in Eretz Yisrael, Source Kuf Beis, which is that, forget about the 200 Sukkim of silver for a moment. Let's go back to the 200 Zuz. There's another way of viewing the 200 Zuz. It doesn't have to be viewed in terms of the value of a pure silver per se. We can understand it functionally. What is the functional purpose of 200 Zuz? You look at the Mishnah in Mishnayos Peah and the commentary of the Rashmi Shantz. The idea of 200 Zuz was that was sort of a minimal threshold of cost of living. That if a person was not able to earn 200 Zuz a year, they were allowed to draw from the Tamkoi, from the public charity funds. So therefore, we might understand 200 Zuz as the amount of money that a person needs in order to subsist for the duration of a year, whatever is the cost of living for a year. So Rav Libis suggested this possibility, but he said, Hareza Guzma, it's going to end up being too much money, so therefore he wasn't so excited about it. But you should know, I once sat on an Adin Torah in his Bezdin. His Bezdin was the Igor of Abanim of New York after Rav Libis had already been Niftar, and the person who took over is our Bezdin. We were dealing with a divorce case. basis, we had to decide the financial issues as well. And the Abbesin said, oh, well, let's figure out what's the cost of living for a year, because that's how we evaluate the ksuba. So it seems like that was the practice that was in fact followed in the Bezin of Libas. I don't know if in every single case, but certainly it was taken into consideration. But Shlomo Duchovsky suggests following this standard for a totally opposite reason. Not that it's too much, but he says that this gets to be at least not too much, that this is not going to be an exorbitant amount. What's the problem they have in the Bati Din Eretz Yisrael? They have a major problem about this. This is one of the topics that was discussed at the annual Dayanus conference in Eretz Yisrael about a year ago, the Kenes HaDayanim. I have a record of the protocols. A number of the Dayanim spoke about this, that the Bati Din are supposed to divide finances between husband and wife according to the Chok Nixei, where there is a community property, what we call Chok Yixei Hazug, where the Shituf Nechasim. Shituf Nechasim means that the assets are essentially split 50-50 between husband and wife, and it wouldn't always work out that way, according to Halakha. According to Halakha, so the wife gets a certain amount based on Nixei Tzombaza, Nixei Milug, but her Maisa Yadeh generally are considered to go Labaila during the span of the marriage, except with certain exceptions, so that she would, according to the Chok that has been instituted by the Knesset, by Israeli law, she ends up with a lot more she would have received anyway. So therefore, a lot of the Dayanim wanted to argue that the husband would never have undertaken that he's going to pay her the Tosefes HaKsuva, whatever amount, 200 Zukukim, and sometimes it'll be a gematria of their names or something, it could be 500,000 Shkolim, that the husband would take upon himself for the Ksuva. He never would have taken that upon himself if he knew that he would have to be splitting the assets 50-50 anyway. It's kind of like a Haratzakta V'gam Yerashta proposition of double dipping, of double collecting. So that's a major problem. So if Duchovsky had this Eitz, he said, oh, one way to avoid that problem is that we're going to minimize the amount that the ksuva will be worth. We'll only focus on the 200 zuz, and we'll evaluate the 200 zuz based on a cost of living index of how much it costs over the course of a year. Because in Eretz Yisrael, that's a lot less than in America, what would be considered to be an average cost of living for your average Israeli. So he said, what's that going to come out to? Maybe 36,000 to 48,000 shkolim a year, at most 120,000 shkolim a year. No, you divide that by what is it now? You divide it by 3.8, you know, whatever is, you know, the dollar value comes out to a lot less, comes out to what is not equivalent to what our cost of living index would be. It would be more similar to maybe the 100 pounds of silver evaluation of Moshe Feinstein at the end of the day anyway. So therefore, that is his suggestion in order to make things more lenient for the husband, while the Beis Avi of Libis thought that it actually increases the amount. But that's another possible point of reference, another frame of reference in terms of evaluating the ksuva. Every single Beis Din obviously would have to make a calculation of what is appropriate in any given case. What if you wanted to have more predictability? So Zalman Nechemia in his correspondence to us suggested that maybe it's not a bad idea when couples get married, just put a dollar amount in the ksuva of what they intended to be. Well, let's say you have a couple that enters into a financial prenuptial agreement and they really don't want to have any kind of obligation triggered in the amount of death or divorce. So they're not allowed to waive the ksuva amount entirely. If they waive the ksuva amount entirely, so then it would be us for the husband and the wife to continue living together. But maybe they can say, we stipulate up front that the way the ksuva will be calculated will be according to Rav Chaim Noah, according to Moshe Feinstein, or something like that. Now that might not be a good idea, because if they happen to make a mistake and get the amount too low from what halakhically it should be, so then they might be considered to be living in sin anyway. So what we suggest, and you find this in the Beis Din of America prenuptial agreement, is you put in the prenuptial agreement, in the event that there's ever a dispute regarding the calculation of payment of the ksuva, we submit that dispute to the Beis Din of America. We submit that dispute to a Beis Din that we trust. This way, the husband is incurring the obligation, but in case there'll be a dispute down the road, how much it should be, so they agree which Beis Din is authorized to make that calculation. We had a case recently where there was a settlement agreement between husband and wife where they released each other from all obligations because they settled on what the amount should be that everybody walks away with from the marriage. And then after the settlement agreement, there was a clause in the settlement agreement that said husband agrees to give his wife a get within 30 days and he's going to bear the cost of the get. So the wife showed up at the Beis Din, said, oh, the husband's supposed to assume the course of the get. That, of course, means the ksuba, too. I also want to collect the ksuba. And the husband said, what do you mean you want to collect the ksuba? We signed the settlement agreement. There was this big release paragraph saying, you hereby release me from anything. He said, I didn't release you from the ksuba. I said, you said you released me from everything. So they had this case that they brought to the Beis Din, and we had to evaluate it. So we looked at, you look in sources 24 and 25, Shailos HaTshuvos of the Rashba says that whenever somebody wants to take money away from somebody else, we, of course, have our rule of Amosim Mechaveo La Faraya. Language really has to be unambiguous. If there is release language that indicated that the wife was really releasing her husband from everything, and the ksuba is not usually claimed in this type of a context, so the Beis Din can make a reasonable inference that if the intention was to collect the ksuba, it would have said explicitly, and even in the clause that said that of the get clause, where there was some monetary provision, it just said the husband's going to pay the cost of the get, not the husband's going to pay the cost of the get and the ksuba. So therefore, a reasonable interpretation of the contract was that the husband is not obligated to pay the ksuba. But this sort of thing does come up. It's a good idea to be very specific in a divorce settlement agreement, that to say that this covers the ksuba as well, and also very specific in a prenuptial agreement to say that if there's a prenuptial agreement where the parties are waiving any claims from each other, that the ksuba is not included in that waiver, because that could lead to there being an isra prohibition for the parties living together. There was a case, I have this in the materials in Ria State of White. This was a woman who got married. The ksuba was worth 100 sous in this case. It was obviously a second marriage. Husband died. She wanted to collect the ksuba, and the estate, the heirs of the husband, said, we're not obligated to pay you because you signed a prenuptial agreement waiving all your rights to everything. And the woman said, but I signed the ksuba after the prenuptial agreement. So the court ruled that no, the ksuba really has no binding effect on the property rights of the signers under the laws of the state of New York. Nobody knows what zuz is. Nobody knows what zakuk is. And anyway, the 200 zuz only would be valued at about $30 anyway. How the court figured out the value of a ksuba for an almana as of today of $30, I have no idea. Really unbelievable prophecy, but that would be actually accurate in that particular case, where it only was really 100 zuz ksuba. But the court really was of the opinion that the parties do not really intend to have the ksuba collected, and this would be a real problem from a halakhic perspective, because halakhically speaking, the woman has to have the comfort level of knowing that she'll have the ability to collect the ksuba. So it's very important when parties sign a prenuptial agreement that they say that it carves out the ksuba, even if they're waiving any other rights of collection, they're not waiving the ksuba, and that this amount of how much should the ksuba should cost, if a ksuba is going to be collected, should be submitted to a Beis Din for adjudication. Now, the ksuba, finally, just to mention a couple of other points before we wrap up, sometimes if a ksuba is signed in such a way, you have the husband really, if you want to make it enforceable, some postgame have argued that in order to ensure enforceability, you can either have it submitted to the Beis Din, but in the event that like it would end up in court, you know, which it shouldn't, but maybe a husband should sign the ksuba so that you can make sure that it would be considered to be an enforceable document from Dina de Machusa Dina. There was a case called Avitzor versus Avitzor, where they had the parties had included in the ksuba a prenuptial agreement submission to say if there's ever a dispute about a get, they'll go to a particular Beis Din, and the court held that was enforceable. They weren't enforcing the 200 zuz and 200 zukukim. That, you know, they may have held was too speculative or a religious determination, but they were enforcing at least an arbitration clause that appeared in the ksuba. We don't put it in the ksuba because, as Ramosha said, our text is more or less sacrosanct, but we have a separate prenuptial agreement document. Finally, there was a case in Illinois called the Goldman case, where a court in 1990, an appellate court, upheld the decision of a trial court where a husband was refusing to give a get to his wife, and the court didn't enforce 200 zuz, but they said, oh, you look in the ksuba, it says, Havele le'intu, Kedas Moshe v'Yisrael. The man is saying to his wife, you'll be my wife according to the laws of Moses in Israel. They got two experts, Rabbi Gedalia Dov Schwartz and Rabbi Emanuel Rachman, interesting combination. They got both of them to testify that, oh, when it says laws of Moses in Israel, that means that when a husband and wife get divorced, in addition to the civil divorce, there has to be a get. So court ruled, since the husband entered into this ksuba, I think he signed it as well, that said, Kedas Moshe Yisrael, he's marrying his wife, obviously into Kedas Moshe Yisrael. That means in the event they get divorced, he would have to give her a get. So therefore, the court ruled, based on the ksuba language of Kedas Moshe Yisrael, husband is obligated to give his wife a get. He didn't listen to the court, because when the decision was handed down, he turned to his wife and he said that I will give you the get under my dead body. And 2 weeks later he died, so therefore he did not need it in the end, but shalom al Yisrael. Okay, in any event, just one other thing, sometimes you look at language in the ksuba and it can be used to enforce other provisions. We had a disagreement between husband and wife that the wife wasn't necessarily looking for a divorce. Was complaining the husband wasn't supporting her sufficiently. He was squirreling off all the money into his pension account and wasn't paying her enough money to support her over the course of the marriage. So we pointed out that there is an obligation under the ksuba that it says that he's going to take care of his wife as kiguvin Yehudayan, that take care of their wives and support them bekushta. Bekushta means behavacha, that he can't just support her a little bit, but it has to be substantial. So therefore we ruled, unusual case, that he wasn't allowed to put all of the full amount that goes into the pension, and he had to leave aside a certain amount in order to take care of her. Ksuba is also used, interestingly nowadays, for purposes of yuchsin, that in order to establish that the parents were really Jewish, that the couple that got married was really Jewish, so often Rabbanim and Batei Din will look at the ksuvos as proof. They see, this was a ksuva that was filled out properly by an Orthodox rabbi, so we know that the people must have been Jewish. So it serves a very important purpose for yuchsin purposes. And finally, I'll just end with this insight that I heard from Rabbi Yisrael Reisman in the name of Rav Avram Palm Zatzal, the Rosh Yeshiva Torah V'Dai. I say, nowadays, what is the most important term in the entire ksuba? So it's not necessarily the 200 zuz, it's not necessarily 200 zukukim, those don't end up getting collected all that much. It is when we say in the ksuba, v'ana, eflach v'okir v'ezen v'panis v'sichi, I'm going to worship you, I'm going to feed you, I'm going to take care of you. V'okir, he says, the key word, eflach is not worship, it means I'm going to work, but v'okir is I'm going to cherish you. I'm going to cherish you. He says that's the most important purpose of the ksuba. And I think that's why the practice is to display the ksuba on the wall, despite its potentially depressing and legalistic nature, because ultimately it's a reminder of the sacred bond of Jewish marriage and the importance of maintaining a peaceful, harmonious, and loving home. So may we all be zoche to have happy and cherished marriages for ourselves and our family members and for all of Klal Yisrael.
In this case, did you have a
I'm sorry? Which case?
In this case, did you have a reserve 10 years ago?
Yeah. Apparently, yes. It wasn't a halakhic prenuptial agreement, just a regular financial prenuptial agreement. Right, yes. Okay.
So they still put in all these huge tests of into the silver.